Whether its price is sky high or as deep as the virtual mines it comes from, Bitcoin gets people talking. And when the cryptocurrency plunged to more than a four-month low on Friday, after Japanese authorities told exchanges to tighten up security, it left others, including Ethereum, on the slide. The second largest cryptocurrency by market value also fell nearly 10%. Both have recovered some of their losses.
Gold investments are not reaping the benefits of a looming global trade war between the United States and China. And it looks like gold-backed exchange-traded funds are headed for their weakest month since July 2017. Now, we know gold is typically seen as a safe haven during times of geopolitical and economic uncertainty, but not this time around. Gold prices have hit six-month lows, and total holdings for the 12 gold-backed ETFs tracked by Reuters were down almost 3% for June. That makes it the largest monthly outflow for gold ETFs in almost a year.
Harley-Davidson motorbikes among the products hit with 25% tariffs from Friday. Bourbon whiskey on the list too. It's all in retaliation for US tariffs on European products. But if the trade war now escalates, it is Europe's car makers who look to be in biggest trouble. Donald Trump already threatening to impose tariffs on European auto imports on national security grounds. Meanwhile, China could put its own new tariffs on US-made cars. Just one catch. Many of those vehicles have a European brand on the hood.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is July 2nd. Welcome to it. 5:09 in the morning. We're happy to have you here with us for the beginning of another business week and another business day. And another edition of The Opening Bell on the broadcast today. We're going to be tackling Facebook privacy in our first segment this morning. Alan St. John will be here from Consumer Reports. And a little bit later in the program, fireworks on this 4th of July week. The American Pyrotechnic Association's executive director is going to be on the broadcast talking about fireworks. You know, some of these fireworks displays are big money, not only for the folks who put them on, but for the communities that host them. We will talk a little bit about that coming up in our second segment this morning at about 5:40. But right now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are off 107 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are off more than 1% each. Around the globe this morning, markets in Europe are generally lower, off anywhere from 0.5% to almost a full percent this morning, with the FTSE in London off almost a full percent. The markets in Asia are generally mixed, with the Nikkei off nearly 492 points, down more than 2%. The Hang Seng is up 1.5%. Oil is trading this morning at $73.82 a barrel, which is down about 33 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Canada has started imposing tariffs on $12 billion in U.S. goods as a retaliation for the Trump administration's new tax on steel and aluminum imports to the United States. Some U.S. products, mostly steel and iron, face 25% tariffs, the same penalty the U.S. slapped on imported steel in May. Other U.S. imports, from ketchup to pizza to dishwasher detergent, will face a 10% tariff at the Canadian border, the same as America's tax on aluminum. Speaking in Leamington, Ontario, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau thanked Canadians for standing against United States sanctions. He urged Canadians to make their choices accordingly in considering whether to buy American products. Also this morning, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is calling for an early conclusion of a regional trade pact that ensures free and rules-based commerce in the face of increasing protectionism on the part of the United States and President Trump. Japan co-chairs the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP, with Singapore and seeks to take leadership in shaping the pact as an alternative to a Pacific Rim trade group that Trump abandoned earlier this year. In his opening remarks to a meeting of 16 Asian trade ministers yesterday, Abe says the pact among the countries that together make up half the global population has enormous growth potential. We begin front and center this morning with privacy at Facebook. We saw the headline, Consumer Reports researchers find Facebook privacy settings maximize data collection. And we thought we would bring in Consumer Reports this morning to talk a little bit about that. It's a concerning headline. Alan St. John is here with us, a tech reporter at Consumer Reports. Alan, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Oh, good morning. It's great to be here.
You know, anytime you talk about Facebook, anytime you talk about privacy, really, I think you get the attention of everybody. And Facebook has certainly had its fair share of headlines lately, but this one was kind of concerning.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, you know, the fact is that there have been any number of reasons for Facebook to change things in a positive direction over the past few months. We had Cambridge Analytica, which was a big thing that everybody knew about. But there was another big thing that most Americans or many Americans didn't really know about. It's something called GDPR, which is basically a comprehensive privacy act in the European Union. And quite frankly, in many cases, not only did they have to change, were companies compelled to change their privacy settings and just, you know, comply with any number of privacy laws in GDPR, but also they were actually using those very same things in the United States as well, because they basically wanted to do a sort of comprehensive overview. But on the other hand, I mean, so we were sort of expecting that things would get better for Facebook. And on the other hand, what we found is actually things really haven't changed, and they're still largely steering people towards giving as much data to Facebook, you know, as they can, basically leaving, you know, having privacy settings that are designed to sort of steer people towards, you know, towards leaving a default that's not necessarily to the consumer's benefit, but maybe the company's benefit.
Yeah. So it's the actual language there that you guys have found, the design and the language of it, steers us to those other settings.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, some of these things are kind of subtle. There's a question of where you place a slider or a button, what color you use, that sort of thing. There's a thing called called dark design and dark patterns that, you know, we've seen this, you know, throughout a digital design, and it's, you know, it's pretty well known. But that said, we saw from the Norwegian Consumer Council, they basically went out in the beginning of with GDPR, they went out and pretty comprehensively looked at Facebook's settings and specifically their privacy settings, and saw that a lot of these things, again, you know, some of them were pretty subtle. The sliders, the designs, the colors steered people towards basically doing what it is that seemed to be. Well, we don't know what we're not even going to talk about what Facebook wants, but we're talking about what's really best for Facebook. In short, Facebook is a company that makes its money by selling consumer data, or let's put it this way, marketing with consumer data, using that as a basis for their very, very successful ad platform. So as far as that's concerned, that's what this is all about, and this is why it seems to accrue towards, you know, Facebook's benefit.
And so as we, I think probably a lot of folks have been seeing these commercials now, hearing them wherever they're at. I know I've seen them on television about Facebook and privacy and how they're making all of these changes. In light of what you've just said, that those ads now seem disingenuous.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, I watch these ads, and it makes me feel warm and cuddly too. You know, I like, you know, pictures of happy people, and for that matter, even the sad people in these commercials, and they really were designed to sort of tug on the heartstrings, and that's all well and good. But on the other hand, basically, what we have on, you know, as you're signing up for an account, on the one hand, you'll find this page very early on in which you have two nice big graphics of happy people, and it says, you have control over who sees what you share on Facebook. In very big type, very loose, it's the only thing on the page. And you go and you look at that, and it's like, well, okay, that's great, and you feel really reassured. But then as you're actually continuing to go through the sign-up process, which is very long and very laborious, it's screen after screen after screen after screen, and when you get to one of the end screens, all of a sudden, it's basically saying, oh, by the way, there's a little warning that says, Facebook recognition allows us to help you protect from strangers, and, you know, and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, also warns you that there's so on the one hand, it's warning you about excuse me, what strangers are, the stranger danger, so to speak, but it's not really telling you so much about what Facebook is actually collecting if you don't change that setting.
Alan, you mentioned it earlier that, you know, you have to go through all these screens to do the sign-up process. After the sign-up, after you sign up, is there any way to go back and change any of this?
Well, yeah, that's actually a bit of good news. You know, the fact is that, one, you know, as you're actually going through the process, first thing is just read it as much as possible. But then beyond that, you know, there is a privacy dashboard, and some of that is going to basically take you to really basic settings about essentially which of your friends can see which posts, and that's important information. But then if you go a little bit deeper, you'll actually find that there really are settings that determine how much information, you know, what kind of data Facebook collects on you and where that data goes. And you know, so as far as that's concerned, really a lot of this is going back onto the consumer. And on the one hand, we think that's unfortunate. But on the other hand, if you're willing to be an empowered consumer and an active consumer, there is actually some control that you can take over this. But, you know, you really do have to be quite diligent.
Part of the issue, too, with Facebook is, and this is what your researchers found, is that some of the privacy settings work differently depending on the operating system you're using. So, for instance, if you have iOS versus Android versions of the Facebook app, what's that about?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, you know, some of this is, you know, just sort of basic tech. I mean, you know, the fact is that, yes, iOS and Android are going to tend to be somewhat different. But, I mean, we found actually in one rather specific setting, and it was only in the iOS version, not in the browser version, and not in the and also not in the Android version, that the setting itself was ambiguous in a way that makes us think that it might actually be broken. I mean, we've sent this to Facebook. They are investigating it. They were not able to get back to us by the time we published, and I'm assuming that at some point we'll hear back from them. But again, it was basically a setting that made you think that the data collection was turned off, when in fact it was probably turned on. And again, a lot of what we're dealing with Facebook is it's kind of a black box, so it's really kind of hard to figure out exactly what's being collected or what isn't. You have to basically, just, you know, to some degree, trust what the settings say.
What is the next step here? I know that your researchers have asked the Federal Trade Commission to get further involved in this. For an investigation, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, there's been this sort of, you know, tug of war between the FTC and Facebook, and this, you know, could easily be another round of this. You know, I think it's really a question of, you know, Facebook had an opportunity here. They had an opportunity to sort of to make a change, not, as I said, not only in the wake of Cambridge Analytica, but also in the wake of these GDPR, European Union data regulations, which are very big, very comprehensive, and have real penalties. Well, the fact is, they had this opportunity, and it seems like they haven't taken it, on this really obvious level. And that's, you know, unfortunate for consumers, because now all of a sudden, so much of the burden of protecting your own privacy falls back on you, rather than sort of having privacy by default options, which is what Consumer Reports advocates for, you know, for all companies, not just Facebook.
I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but how is this whole thing controversy affecting people using Facebook? Is their usership down? Are they getting any kind of blowback from any of this?
Well, the answer to that is, you know, it's a little bit hard to tell, and they are really, you know, they're the leader in this market. But I think you're really getting people are really seriously thinking about, can I actually, you know, can I opt out of Facebook, you know, entirely? Can I reduce my Facebook use? I think that really before Cambridge Analytica, came up, I think most people didn't really think very much about Facebook and about privacy and very specifically about the data collection side of Facebook. And I think now people are. And I think, you know, so I think the other question is going to be how this plays out in the long term. Is there going to be, you know, further revelations, or is Facebook going to basically see this as a wake-up call and change the way they do business and understand that right now consumers see privacy as something important and something as a real priority and to some degree something that we found, you know, consumers are willing to pay for this in some ways. So as far as that's concerned, we don't think they should have to. But the fact is that the idea of that privacy settings that are advantageous are more important than getting something cheap or free.
Yeah. Alan, good information this morning. We appreciate you being on with us.
This is great. Always great to talk to you guys.
Great. We will link out to your story with the podcast. We've already put it on Twitter this morning. Alan St. John, tech reporter at Consumer Reports. Consumer Reports.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Uber has launched its dockless electric bike sharing service, Jump, on Chicago's South Side. It's taking part in the city's dockless bike share pilot program, joining Lime, Pace, and Ofo, three other services that have been testing their dockless bikes in the city. The bikes cost $2 for a 30-minute ride and can be accessed through the Uber app or the Jump mobile app. Chicago-based Redbox announced a deal with Warner Brothers to begin offering new DVD releases the same day that titles go on sale in retail stores. Redbox previously had to wait 7 days before offering a Warner Brothers picture. And the Northwestern Medicine Bloom Cardiovascular Institute in Chicago is launching a new center that will use artificial intelligence and machine learning to study and find treatments for heart disease. It will be paid for with a $25 million grant from the Bloom Family Charitable Foundation. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. 5:38 now here on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell on this 4th of July week. As I was trying to fall asleep last night, I started hearing them for the first time this season, the booms and the cracks and the crashes off in the distance. Fireworks are here. Lots of us enjoyed those items on this time of the year, and we thought we'd bring in the American Pyrotechnics Association this morning, Pyrotechnic Association, and Julie Heckman, the executive director, is good enough to be on with us this morning to talk a little bit about fireworks safety and some numbers behind fireworks. Julie, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Well, good morning. Happy 4th of July.
Yeah, same to you. This is going to be a busy week, I'm guessing, for a lot of folks who are using fireworks. Let's start with some of the trends and the numbers, first of all. I think a lot of us like going to those big displays in cities like Chicago and, in little towns as well. But how many of us are actually doing our own displays these days?
Well, you know, it's a good combination because people like to tend to do both. They like to celebrate at home and then also attend their community display. But if I can tell you in poundage, that might help break it out a little bit.
Sure.
So last year in 2017, Americans used 229 million pounds of backyard consumer fireworks.
Wow, so that's about a pound each, isn't it?
Just about.
It's about a pound each.
And the professional display side, we used 25.4 million.
Oh, wow, so it's not even close.
Yeah, you know, 49 states plus the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico allow the sale and use of backyard fireworks. And as those laws have relaxed and more people now have accessibility, you know, the sales, the consumption is really, you know, going up significantly.
That's the other part of the trends here. I think, some of us who are a certain age remember when fireworks were illegal, just you couldn't get them at all. Here in Illinois, I remember growing up as a kid, we couldn't buy them at all legally. But that's changed now. Why is that changing?
Well, you know, there are a couple factors. I think as the safety of the product improved and the number of injuries went down, more and more people were excited to try to use backyard fireworks. But also, it's about our pride and patriotism. And then when we hit the tough economic times, back in 2008, 2009, the state started looking at a way to generate tax revenue, and they saw that people were going across state lines and buying fireworks. So they decided to reap that tax benefit within their state borders by modifying the fireworks law.
Because there's big money here. Let's talk a little bit about some of the numbers in terms of how much all of that fireworks, that poundage of fireworks cost. What kind of revenue are we talking about for the fireworks industry?
Well, in 2017, industry as a whole was just over $1.2 billion. But of that, $885 million was from the consumer side.
So that's a big increase. I mean, so from one year to the next, what are we talking about, a $60 million increase?
Yes, we were $60 million increase between 2016 and 2017. And we're anticipating that revenues from this 4th of July will exceed $900 million.
Julie, let's talk a little bit about safety. This is, I saw it starting, I think, last Thursday on the TV news. Every year we see the fireworks dummies being blown apart and all of those standard videos from ATF and other places. How has safety improved for fireworks over the years, and what are the key messages you want to get out?
Well, the products themselves are safe if they're used appropriately. The vast majority of firework-related injuries are related to misuse, and often blatant misuse. So we encourage people to make certain, first, you have to obey your local law. So your municipal law may be more strict than the state law, so it's important to find out from the local fire folks what you're allowed to use before you choose to use fireworks. But you want to purchase your fireworks from a reputable fireworks dealer. And when we say that, we mean these stands, these stores are quite visible and noticeable. They're not hiding. They have colorful banners. They're out there for everybody to see. It's important that when you take your fireworks home, you take the time to thoroughly read all the instructions for use and pay attention to the warnings on the product, because that tells you what the product's actually going to do. You want to have a safe distance for your spectators. You want to use a flat, level, dry surface where you discharge your fireworks. You know, often people think, oh, I'm just going to set them off in the middle of the backyard. Well, the backyard might not be level, so we recommend that you put down a nice sheet of plywood to add some stability to the fireworks. You should have a bucket of water handy, and you should only light one at a time. And probably one of the most important rules is you need someone who is sober to be in charge of your firework activities.
That's the key here, because a lot of us like to have a cold beverage or two on the holiday. It's just like drinking and driving. You can't do something this dangerous while you're inebriated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a key point.
I was surprised at going through some of the data to see that, well, maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but men are the most likely to be injured from fireworks displays. What does that tell you?
Well, I think it is male bravado. I just asked that question the other day to a gentleman who was explaining about one of his firework-related injuries, and I asked him, what provoked you to even do that? Because I was a little surprised. It was quite blatant misuse of product, and he just shrugged it off and said it's male bravado. And I just think that everybody needs to respect fireworks. You know, there are inherent dangers, and so you have to use the product appropriately.
I guess part of this, too, is, you know, you mentioned getting your fireworks at a dealer, someplace that's going to take pride and knows where this stuff come from. I'm guessing you'd probably encourage people not to buy fireworks, let's say, out of the back of a van on the side of the highway.
Exactly, because if you're not purchasing from someone who is visible, meaning all of these retail vendors, They are inspected. They are issued a permit by the local authority having jurisdiction. Usually that's the local fire authority. But they have permits, and they're going to have appropriate storage, and they're going to be selling what is legal, you know, legal for sale. So please visit those vendors and avoid anybody who might be trying to hide or sell something out of an unmarked van.
I always find it surprising that as we celebrate the most American of holidays, our independence, that we do it with fireworks that come from other countries. I'm guessing mostly from China. Is that still the case, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The vast majority of fireworks are imported from China. And that is because everything is made by hand, and the regulations in the U.S. have pushed more and more of that manufacturing outside of our borders and, you know, into neighboring countries. Well, not so neighboring when it comes to China, but into other countries. And, you know, China has been the leading producer globally for fireworks, not just the U.S. market. They really have perfected the production of fireworks and as well as the safety. We spend a lot of time in China. The importers travel there a couple times a year to meet specifically with the factories to make certain that the product that we're importing into the United States is going to be the safest, highest quality, and also compliant.
I know, Julie, you have to be sort of unbiased when it comes to this next question, so I know that you can't answer it, but where's the best fireworks display in the country, if you had to choose?
That's a big question. Depends if you're talking 4th of July or if you're talking other times of years. And there's some great competitions just northern of us in Canada. I don't know. Every show is just so special. And often it's about being with your community. It's being with your family and enjoying that show. That's part of our, you know, pride, patriotism, and being together as a community for Independence Day. But there are dozens and dozens of phenomenal shows. I know Chicago starts early, I believe, on July 3rd with Navy Pier has a beautiful, beautiful program.
Yeah.
The granddaddy of them all, Macy's, New York
right.
City, on July 4th is just magnificent. I will be in Nashville for their phenomenal 4th of July. And there's plenty on the West Coast, too.
Yeah, I think one of the best ones I've been to is a small town just down south of Chicago, who had a fife and drum band, and they did the whole sort of reenactment one year of the 4th of July from our founding father's standpoint. Then they had the fireworks display. That those, I think, are the best when you have that real Americana involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And often it's, you know, those 16,000 hometown displays that are the ones that will be memorable. And again, it's about being with your community.
All right. Julie, we appreciate you being on with us. Have a wonderful 4th of July weekend, and we appreciate you being on with us.
Thank you so much. You have a safe 4th.
Julie Heckman is the Executive Director of the American Pyrotechnic Association ahead of 4th of July fireworks this year.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are down 131 points. NASDAQ futures are off about 55 points. S&P futures down about 17 points. This morning, gold and silver are both lower. Gold is at $12.50 an ounce, down about $4.50. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning. We begin this week with a reminder it's a holiday-shortened trading week because of the 4th of July. And the markets will be closing during the noon hour on Tuesday, will be closed all day Wednesday, and then reopen at 8:30 on Thursday morning, the day after the 4th of July. Happening again, a federal jury punishing the world's largest pork producer with a $25 million verdict after jurors decided that two neighbors of a hog farm suffered unreasonable nuisances from flies, buzzards, and rumbling trucks. The jury's verdict Friday ended a five-week trial where attorneys for Smithfield Foods expected to present their best arguments. It's the second in a series of cases in which more than 500 neighbors of industrial-scale hog farms have targeted the Virginia-based but Chinese-owned company for its open-pit waste handling methods. And, of course, we saw the other big verdict that happened in North Carolina a few weeks ago. Turning to the market activity today, hog traders will be trading the largest hog numbers at this time of the year in the nation's history. And wheat futures ended last Friday up 17.5 cents a bushel, but July's soybeans ended down 3.5 cents a bushel. Corn ended the week up a nickel. And in livestock trade, good gains up the $3 limit on August cattle and October cattle in the Friday trade. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, July 2nd. The Institute for Supply Management releases its manufacturing index for June today. Also, the Commerce Department reports on construction spending for May. Also, the PMI manufacturing index is out as well. Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg scheduled to testify before European Parliament. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, American automakers report June sales tomorrow. The U.S. markets will close early for the 4th of July holiday on Wednesday, remaining closed all day Wednesday. Thursday, the Federal Reserve reports on its Board of Governors meeting minutes. A U.S. jobs report comes out on Friday. Tariffs on the first $34 billion of Chinese goods go into effect as well. Just some of the things that could move the markets. A couple of other stories before we leave you this morning. Central Bank survey shows Japan's corporate outlook has worsened from 3 months ago. Bank of Japan survey measuring confidence among large-scale manufacturers was at 21 points. That's down 3 points from March. This was the first decline in about 2 years. The Environmental Protection Agency's chief ethics official says he is pushing for a series of independent investigations into Scott Pruitt's actions as administrator of the federal agency. A letter to the U.S. Government Ethics Committee says from the EPA ethics official writes that potential issues regarding Pruitt have surfaced through sources within the EPA and media reports since April. The ethics officer writes that he has referred a number of those matters now to EPA's inspector general. He says all are either under consideration for acceptance or under active investigation. News media reports have focused on Pruitt's rental of a condo from a lobbyist's spouse, his use of staff to handle personal matters, and other issues as well. Former President Barack Obama has visited a prominent Silicon Valley venture capital firm. Andrew Chen, a general partner at Andreessen Horowitz, posted a photo on Twitter of Obama posing Friday with a large group of people, including several venture capitalists at the firm based in Menlo Park, California. Mr. Obama, while still president in 2016, was asked by Bloomberg about his post-presidency plans and mentioned Silicon Valley and pulling together his interests in science and organization to possibly get into the venture capitalists' world. We will see if perhaps this might be the beginning of that.